We get flashes from dreams, during times of crisis. People have an inner knowing of what direction to take when it is necessary. And sometimes your friends can fudge a little, Dr. Newton. By friends, you mean entities from the spirit world? They give you hints, by flashing ideas. I've done it. Dr. Newton, nevertheless, you had to come to me to unlock your conscious amnesia.
We have the capacity to know when it is necessary. I was ready for change when I heard about you.
Claudise allowed me to see the past with you because it was to my benefit.
Dr. Newton, otherwise, your amnesia would have remained intact?
Yes, that would have meant I wasn't supposed to know certain things yet. In my opinion, when clients are unable to go into hypnosis at any given time, or if they have only sketchy memories in trance, there is a reason this blockage. This does not mean these people have no past memories, that they are not ready to have them exposed. My client knew something was hindering her growth and wanted it revealed. The superconscious identity of the soul houses our continuous memory, including goals. When the time in our lives is appropriate, we must harmonize human material needs with our soul's purpose for being. I try to take a common sense approach in bringing past and present experiences into alignment. Our eternal identity never leaves us alone in the bodies we choose, despite our current status. In reflection, meditation, or prayer, the memories of who we really are do filter down to us in selective thought each day. In small, intuitive ways, through the cloud of amnesia, we are given clues the justification of our being. After desensitizing the source of her headaches, I completed my session with Hester by reinforcing her choice to be a woman for reasons other than intimidating men. I gave her permission to lower her defenses a little and be less aggressive. We discussed options for restructuring occupational goals toward the helping professions and the possibilities of volunteer service work. She was finally able to see her life today as a great opportunity for learning rather than a failure of gender choice. After a case is completed, I never cease to admire the brutal honesty of souls. When a soul has led a productive life beneficial to themselves and those around them, I notice they return to the spirit world with enthusiasm. However, when subjects like Case 13 report they wasted a past life, especially from early suicide, then they describe going back rather dejected. When orientation is upsetting to a subject, I find an underlying reason is the abruptness with which a soul is once again in full possession of all knowledge. After physical death, unencumbered by a human body, the soul has a sudden influx of perception. The stupid things we did in life hit us hard in orientation. I see more relaxation and greater clarity of thought move my subjects further into the spirit world. Souls are created in a positive matrix of such love and wisdom that when a soul starts to come to a planet like Earth and join the physical beings who have evolved from a primitive state, the violence is a shock. Humans have the raw, negative emotions of anger and hate as an outgrowth of their fear and pain connected with survival going back to the Stone Age. Both positive and negative emotions are mixed between soul and host for their mutual benefit. If a soul only knew love and peace, it would gain no insight and never truly appreciate the value of these positive feelings. The test of reincarnation for a soul coming to Earth is the conquering of fear in a human body. A soul grows by trying to overcome all negative emotions connected to fear through perseverance in many lifetimes, often returning to the spirit world bruised or hurt, as Case 13 indicated. Some of this negativity can be retained, even in the spirit world, and may reappear in another life with a new body. On the other hand, there is a trade-off. It's in joy and unabashed pleasure that the true nature of an individual soul is revealed on Earth in the face of a happy human being. Orientation conferences with our guides allow us to begin the long process of self-evaluation between lives. Soon we will have another conference, this time with more master beings in attendance. In the last chapter, I referred to the ancient Egyptian tradition of newly deceased souls being taken into a hall of judgment to account for their past life.
In one form or another, the concept of a torturous courtroom trial awaiting us right after death has been part of the religious belief system of many cultures. Occasionally, a susceptible individual in a traumatic situation will say they had an out-of-body experience with nightmarish visions of being taken by frightening specters into an afterlife of darkness where they were sentenced in front of demonic judges. In these cases, I suspect a strong preconditioned belief system of hell. In the quiet, relaxing state of hypnosis, with continuity on all mental levels, my subjects report that the initial orientation session with their guides prepares them to go before a panel of superior beings. However, the words courtroom and trial are not used to describe these proceedings. A number of my cases have called these wise beings, directors and even judges, but most refer to them as a council of masters or elders. This board of review is generally composed of between 3 and 7 members, and since souls appear before them after arriving at their home base, I will go into this conference in more detail at the end of the next chapter. All soul evaluation conferences, be they with our guides, peers, or a panel of masters, have one thing in common. The feedback and past life analyses we receive in terms of judgment is based upon the original intent of our choices as much as the actions of a lifetime. Our motivations are questioned and criticized, but not condemned in such a way as to make us suffer. As I explained in Chapter 4, this does not mean souls are exonerated for their acts which harmed others simply because they are sorry. Karmic payment will come in a future life. I have been told that our spiritual masters constantly remind us that because the human brain does not have an innate moral sense of ethics, conscience is the soul's responsibility. Nevertheless, there is overwhelming forgiveness in the spirit world. This world is ageless, and so too are our learning tasks. We will be given other chances in our struggle for growth. When the initial conference with our guide is over, we leave the place of orientation and join a coordinated flow of activity involving the transit of enormous numbers of other souls into a kind of central receiving station. 6. Transition. All souls, regardless of experience, eventually arrive at a central port in the spirit world which I call the staging area. I have said there are variations in the speed of soul movement right after death, depending upon spiritual maturity. Once past the orientation station, there seems to be no further travel detours for anyone entering this space of the spirit world. Apparently, large numbers of returning souls are conveyed in a spiritual form of mass transit. Sometimes souls are escorted by their guides to this area. I find this practice is especially true for the younger souls. Others are directed through by an unseen force which pulls them into the staging area and then beyond to waiting entities. From what I am able to determine, accompaniment by other entities depends upon the volition of one's guide. In most cases, haste is not an issue, but souls do not dawdle along on this leg of their journey. The feelings we have along this path depend on our state of mind after each life. The assembly and transfer of souls really involves two phases. The staging area is not an encampment space. Spirits are brought in, collected, and then projected out to their proper final destinations. When I hear accounts of this particular junction, I visualize myself walking with large numbers of travelers through the central terminal of a metropolitan airport which has the capacity to fly all of us out in any direction. One of my clients described the staging area as resembling the hub of a great wagon wheel, where we are transported from a center along the spokes to our designated places. My subjects say this region appears to them as having a large number of unacquainted spirits moving in and out of the hub in an efficient manner with no congestion. Another person called this area the Los Angeles Freeway without gridlock. There may be other similar wheel hubs with freeway type on and off ramps in the spirit world, but each client considers their own route to and from this center to be the only one. The observations I hear about the nature of the spirit world when entering the staging area have definitely changed from those first impressions of layering and foggy stratification. It is as if the soul is now traveling through the loosely, wound arms of a mighty galactic cloud into a more unified celestial field. While their spirits hover in the open arena of the staging area preparing for further transport out to prescribed spaces, I enjoy listening to the excitement in the voices of my subjects. They are dazzled by an eternal world spread out before them and believe that somewhere within lies the nucleus of creation. When they look at the fully opened canopy around them, subjects will state that the spirit world appears to be a varied luminescence. I hear nothing about the inky blackness we associate with deep space. The gatherings of souls that clients see in the foreground in this amphitheater appear as myriads of sharp starlights all going in different directions. Some move fast while others drift. The more distant energy concentrations have been pictured as islands of misty veils. I am told the most outstanding characteristic of the spirit world is a continuous feeling of a powerful mental force directing everything in uncanny harmony. People say this is a place of pure thought. Thought takes many forms. It is at this vantage point in their return that souls begin to anticipate meeting others who wait for them. A few of these companions may have already been seen at the gateway, but most have not. Without exception, souls who wish to contact each other, especially when on the move, do so by just thinking of the entity they want. Suddenly, the individual called will appear in the soul mind of the traveler. These telepathic communications by the energy of all spiritual entities allow for a non-visual affinity, while two energy forms who actually come near one another provide a more direct connection. There is uniformity in the accounts of my subjects as to their manner of spiritual travel, routes, and destinations, although what they see along the way is distinctive with each person. I searched through my case files to find a subject whose experiences along this route to an ultimate spiritual destination was both descriptive and yet representative of what many others have told me. I selected an insightful, 41-year-old graphic designer with a mature soul. This man's soul had traveled over this course many times between a long span of lives. Case 14. Dr. Newton, you are now ready to begin the final portion of your homeward journey toward the place where your soul belongs in the spirit world. On the count of three, all the details of this final leg of your travels will become clear to you. It will be easy for you to report on everything you see because you are familiar with the route. Are you ready? S. Yes. Dr. Newton, raising my voice to a commanding tone, 1. We are getting started. 2. Your soul has now moved out of the area of orientation. 3. Quickly, what is your first impression? S. Distances are unlimited, endless space, forever. Dr. Newton, so, are you telling me the spirit world is endless? S. Long pause, to be honest. From where I am floating, it looks endless. But when I begin to really move, it changes. Dr. Newton, changes how? S. Well, everything remains formless, but when I am gliding faster, I see I'm moving around inside a gigantic bowl, turned upside down. I don't know where the rims of the bowl are, or even if any exist. Dr. Newton, then movement gives you the sense of a spherical spirit world? S. Yes, but it's only a feeling of enclosed uniformity when I am moving rapidly. Dr. Newton, why does rapid movement, your speed, give you the feeling of being in a bowl? S. Long pause, it's strange. Although everything appears to go on straight when my soul is drifting, that changes to a feeling of roundness when I am moving fast on a line of contact. Dr. Newton, what do you mean by a line of contact? S. Towards a specific destination. Dr. Newton, how does moving with speed on the given line of travel change your observational perceptions of the spirit world to a feeling it is round? S. Because with speed the lines seem to bend. They curve in a more obvious direction for me and give me less freedom of movement. Note, other subjects, who are also disposed toward linear descriptions, speak of traveling along directional force lines which have the spatial properties of a grid system. One person called them vibrational strings. Dr. Newton, by less freedom, Do you mean less personal control?
S. Yes. Dr. Newton, can you more precisely describe the movement of your soul along these curving contact lines?
S. It's just more purposeful, when my soul is being directed someplace on a line. It's like I'm in a current of white water, only not as thick as water, because the current is lighter than air.
Dr. Newton, then, in this spiritual atmosphere, you don't have the sense of density such as in water?
S. No, I don't, but what I am trying to say is I'm being carried along as if I were in a current underwater.
S. Well, it's as if we are all swimming, being carried along, in a swift current which we can't control, under somebody's direction up and down from each other in space, with nothing solid around us.
Dr. Newton, do you see other souls traveling in a purposeful way above and below you?
S. Yes, it's as if we start in a stream and then all of us returning from death are pulled into a great river together.
Dr. Newton, why do you think this is so?
Dr. Newton, when do the numbers of returning souls seem the highest to you?
S. When the rivers converge into, I can't describe it, Dr. Newton, please try.
S. Pause. We are gathered into a sea, where all of us swirl around, in slow motion. Then, I feel as though I'm being pulled away to a small tributary again and it's quieter, further from the thoughts of so many minds, going to the ones I know.
Dr. Newton, later, in your normal travels as a soul, is it the same as being propelled around in streams and rivers as you have just described?
S. No, not at all. This is different. We are like salmon going up to spawn, returning home. Once we get there, we are not pushed about this way. Then we can drift.
Dr. Newton, who is doing the pushing while you are being taken home?
S. Higher entities. The ones in charge of our movements to get us home.
S. Above him, I think.
Dr. Newton, what else are you feeling at this moment?
S. Peace.
There is such peace you never want to leave again.
Dr. Newton, anything more?
S. Oh, I have some anticipation, too, while moving slowly with the energy current.
Dr. Newton, entities such as your guide?
Dr. Newton, all right, now I want you to continue to move further along with the current of energy closer to the area where you are supposed to go. Look around carefully and tell me what you see.
S. I see a variety of lights, in patches, separated from each other by galleries.
Dr. Newton, by galleries, do you mean a series of enclosures?
S. More like a long corridor, bulging out in places, stretching out away from me into the distance.
Dr. Newton, and the lights?
S. They are people. The souls of people within the bulging galleries reflecting light outward to me.
That's what I'm seeing, patches of lights bobbing around.
S. No, there are no walls here. Nothing is structural, with angles and corners.
It's hard for me to explain.
Exactly,
Dr. Newton, you are doing fine.
Now, I want you to tell me what separates the light clusters from each other along this corridor you are describing.
S. The people are divided by thin, wispy filaments, making the light milky, like the transparency of frosted glass. There is an incandescent glow from their energy as I pass by.
Dr. Newton, are these clusters of people structurally separated from each other in the bulges along the corridor?
Dr. Newton, how do you see individual souls within the clusters?
S. Pause, as light dots. I see masses of dots hanging in clumps as hanging grapes, all lit up.
Dr. Newton, do these clumps represent various groups of soul energy masses with space between them?
S. Yes, they are separated into small groups. I am going to my own clump.
Dr. Newton, what else do you feel about them as you pass by on the way to your cluster?
S. I can feel their thoughts reaching out, so varied, but together too, such harmony, but,
stops Dr. Newton. Go on.
S. I don't know the ones I'm passing now, it doesn't matter.
S. Laughs, a long glow, worm, its sides bulging in and out, the movement is rhythmic. Dr. Newton, you mean the corridor itself appears to move?
Yes, parts of it, swaying as a ribbon in the breeze while I am going further away.
Dr. Newton, continue floating and tell me what happens to you next.
Pause, I'm at the edge of another corridor, I'm slowing down.
Dr. Newton, okay, let's pass on by these clusters which seem to bulge out along a corridor. Give me an example of what the whole thing looks like to you from a distance.
Dr. Newton, why?
Grows excited, because, oh, good. I'm coming in towards the site where my friends are attached.
Dr. Newton, and how do you feel at this moment?
Fantastic. There is a familiar pulling of minds, reaching out to me, I'm catching the tail of their kite, joining them in thought I'm home.
Dr. Newton, is your particular cluster group of friends isolated from the other groups of souls living in other corridors?
No one is really isolated, although some of the younger ones may think so.
I've been around a long time, though, and I have a lot of connections, said with modest confidence.
Dr. Newton, so you felt connections with those other corridors, even with spirits in them you might not know from past experience?
I do because of the connections I have had.
There is a oneness here.
Dr. Newton, when you are moving around as a spirit, what is the major difference in your interactions with other souls, compared to being in human form on Earth?
Here no one is a stranger. There is a total lack of hostility toward anyone.
Dr. Newton, you mean every spirit is friendly to every other spirit, regardless of prior associations in many settings?
That's right, and it's more than just being friendly.
Dr. Newton, in what way?
We recognize a universal bond between us which makes us all the same.
There is no suspicion toward each other.
Dr. Newton, how does this attitude manifest itself between souls who first meet?
By complete openness and acceptance.
Dr. Newton, living on Earth must be difficult for souls, then?
It is, for the newer ones especially, because they go to Earth expecting to be treated fairly. When they aren't, it's a shock.
For some, it takes quite a few lives to get used to the Earth body.
Dr. Newton, and if the newer souls are struggling with these Earth conditions, are they less efficient when working within the human mind?
I would have to say yes, because the brain drives a lot of fear and violence into our souls.
It's hard for us, but that's why we come to Earth, to overcome.
Dr. Newton, in your opinion, might the newer souls tend to be more fragile and in need of group support upon returning to their cluster?
That's absolutely true. We all want to return home.
Will you let me stop talking now, so I can meet with my owner?
Case 14 offered us a few more. One person's glowworms bulging out in places is another's floating trail of balloons.
A description about clumps of huge, translucent bulbs in one case becomes giant bunches of transparent bubbles from somebody else mentally returning to the spirit world.
I regularly hear such water, words as currents and streams used to explain a flowing directional movement, where a sky, word like cloud denotes a freedom of motion associated with drifting.
Visual images which call up expressions of energy mass and group clusters to indicate souls themselves are especially popular.
I have adopted some of this spiritual language myself.
At the final debarkation zone for the incoming soul, waiting cluster groups of familiar entities may be large or small, depending upon the soul developmental level and other factors which I will take up as we get a little further along.
By way of comparison with case 14, the next case demonstrates a more insular perception of the spirit world from a soul with less maturity. In case 15, the transition of this soul from the staging area to her home cluster is fairly rapid in her mind. The case is informative because it presents attributes of propriety felt by this soul to a designated space, as well as deference toward those who manage the system. Because this subject is less experienced and a bit edgy over what she sees as a need for conformity, we are given another interpretation of spiritual guidelines for group placement.
Case 15. Dr. Newton, I want to talk to you about your trip into the place where you normally stay in the spirit world. Your soul is now moving toward this destination. Explain what you see and feel. S. Nervously, I'm going outward, somehow, Dr. Newton, outward. S. Puzzled, I am floating along in a chain of some kind. It's as though I'm weaving through a series of connecting links, a foggy maze. Then, it opens up. Oh. Dr. Newton, what is it? S. With awe, I have come into a grand arena. I see many others, Chris, crossing around me. Subject grows uncomfortable. Dr. Newton, just relax. You are in the staging area now. Do you still see your guide? S. With hesitation. Yes, nearby, otherwise I would be lost. It's so vast. Dr. Newton, I place my hand on the subject's forehead. Continue to relax and remember you have been here before, although everything may seem new to you. What do you do now? S. I am carried forward, rapidly, straight past others. Then I'm in an empty space, open. Dr. Newton, does this void mean everything is black around you? S. It's never black here, the light just contracts to darker shades because of my speed. When I slow down, things get brighter. Others confirm this observation. Dr. Newton, continue on and report back to me what you see next. S. After a while I see nests of people. S. Yes, like hives, I see them as bunches of moving lights, fireflies. Dr. Newton, all right. Keep moving and tell me what you feel. S. Warmth, friendship, empathy, it's dreamy. Dr. Newton, what is it? S. I have slowed way down, things are different. Dr. Newton, how? S. More clearly defined, pause, I know this place. Dr. Newton, have you reached your own hive, cluster group? S. Long pause, not yet, I guess. Dr. Newton, you mean groups of people? Dr. Newton, just look about you and report back to me exactly what you see and feel. S. Subject begins to tremble. There are bunches of people, together, off in the distance, but, there. Dr. Newton, what do you see? S. Fearfully, people I know, some of my family, off in the distance, but, with anguish, I don't seem to be able to reach them. S. In tearful bewilderment, I don't know. God, don't they know I'm here? Subject begins to struggle in her chair and then extends her arm and open hand at my office wall. I can't reach my father. Dr. Newton, why? Note, I briefly stop my questioning. This client's father had a great influence in her most immediate past life and she needs additional calming techniques. I also decide to reinforce her protective shield before continuing. Dr. Newton, what do you think is the reason your father is off in the distance so you can't reach him? S. During a long pause I use the time to dry subject's face, which has become wet with tears and perspiration. I don't know, Dr. Newton, I place my hand on subject's forehead and command, connect with your father, now. S. After a pause the subject relaxes, it's okay, he is telling me to be patient and everything will become clear to me, I want to go over there and be near him. Dr. Newton, and what does he tell you about that? S. Sadly, he says, that he can always be in my mind if I need him and, I will learn to do this better, think telepathically, but he has to stay where he is. Dr. Newton, what do you think is the basic reason for your father remaining in this other place? S. Tearfully, he does not belong in my hive. Dr. Newton, anything else? S. There, directors, they don't. Crying again, I'm not sure. Note, normally, I try to avoid too much intervention when subjects are describing their spiritual transitions. In this case, my client is confused and disoriented. So I offer a little guidance of my own. Dr. Newton, let's analyze why you can't reach your father's position right now.
Could this separation be the result of higher entities believing this is a time for individual reflection on your part and that you should associate only with other souls at your own level of development? S. Subject is more restored. Yes, those messages are coming through. I have to work things out for myself, with others like me. The directors encourage us, and my father is helping me understand, too.